Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's November 8th, 2019 program, The Impact of Homelessness, Cost to Our Community. This is the 10th program for our 2019-2020 programming year. My name is Eric Richardson and I serve as City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente, who exists to provide high-quality, affordable health care services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. The University of Oregon. Since 1876, the university has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health. Peace Health is proud to serve the Eugene, Lane County, and surrounding areas. As your hometown health care provider for more than 80 years, their mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. And Lane Community College. Lane Community College transforms life through learning. It provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu/programs. And our Sapphire sponsor today is AARP of Oregon. The AARP celebrates creating livable communities for all ages. Learn more at aarp.org. We'd also like to acknowledge the generous support of the City of Eugene, who has just recently come on as an official sponsor of our programming, and we want to honor that by supporting democracy and civic participation here at the City Club. Thank you, the City of Eugene. Now I'd like to invite to the podium someone closely related to our city. Please welcome former Mayor Kitty Piercy.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today's program on the cost of homeless folks to our community was planned by Skip Coburn and Joshua Purvis. Skip was unable to be here today, so I stepped in. So that's my role. But I did want to point out, and I think you'll hear from Joaquin about this later maybe, that today's kind of a special day in Eugene as this program goes, because Homes for Good is constructing its first Housing First project. Yeah. 51 units for longtime homeless folks that provides 20-hour service to support folks and will not require sobriety in order to be housed. This is a big step forward for people coming off the streets. So my comment today is this. My hope today is that you will think deeply and broadly about the costs, the real cost of inadequate responses to the unhoused, the cost of services as well as the cost of our community's sense of well-being, and the cost to hundreds of lives of unhoused young people, children, teens, elderly. Being unhoused is not a crime, but perhaps it can be termed criminal that so many Americans are unhoused. So with that, I will introduce our speakers today. First up is Bob Sorens. He will provide a brief review of Lane County's recently convened community impact kickoff, where elected officials, social service providers, city and county staff, and homeless advocates gathered to discuss next steps in implementing recommendations from the TAC report. Sorens is the Homeless and Supportive Housing Services Supervisor for Lane County Health and Human Services. He previously was a deputy director for the Orange County Congregation Community Organization and a managing partner with CLA and Associates. He earned an MPA in urban management from Cal State Fullerton and an MDIB in pastoral ministry from the San Francisco Theological Seminary. Then we have a panel of Joaquin Alferez, Mark Douthit, and Chris Skinner, who will discuss some dimensions of this problem. Joaquin oversees the resident services, family self-sufficiency, and permanent supportive housing programs at that great place, Homes for Good. She's a graduate of the University of Oregon and a former Peace Corps volunteer. Do you know I was too? And she served as transitional resource counselor with Shelter Care and a resident services supervisor with Home Forward in Portland. Mark Douthit is the Men's Recreation Program Director at Willamette Family Buckley Detox Center, located in the Whitaker neighborhood at Willamette Family's Carlton House, a residential housing facility that offers individual counseling and other mental health and residential facilities and other mental health and recovery support. Chris Skinner became the chief of police for the city of Eugene in 2018 after serving as chief of police in Richland, Washington. Previously, he held positions with Benton County Sheriff's Office and Hillsborough Police Department. He has a master's degree in business administration from George Fox University and is a graduate of the FBI National Academy. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Bob Sorensen. Maybe you, the panelists, should just come on up here and get yourself situated.
Good afternoon. I'm happy to share with you some reflections from our work with local government here on a very challenging topic. A couple of weeks ago, we convened a group of stakeholders who represented a broad section of the community, from business leaders to people with lived experience to folks who are public administrators in the city of Eugene and city of Springfield, Cottage Grove, also public administrators here in Lane County, folks from the faith-based community, and as broad of a sector we could get. We met in this far distant land called Cottage Grove. And we met for 2 days, which was a big challenge, especially for folks who have such busy lives, and we were really grateful for that time together. And what we had intended to do was really to talk about how, as a community, we can support this effort that the city of Eugene and the county of Lane are engaged in terms of improving our system that provides service delivery of housing and supportive services to people who are unhoused. And what we learned early on was it was a challenging conversation because the system improvements that we're talking about in some ways may be perceived as a narrow way to address this larger problem. And especially the folks who gathered on those 2 days with lived experience expressed a great deal of urgency about how do we change this system. And what I discovered, really what people are talking about is a paradigm shift, right? So although the system improvements that we're looking at, and there's 10 of these, address the current delivery of these services and housing, there are larger impacts that we're trying to address as well. As a way of talking about that, what I wanted to mention as well as in terms of the topic today about the cost of homelessness, In my work in other communities, I'm a recent arrival in Oregon. I've lived here now a whole 4 months and started with Lane County on July 1st. And I'm from Southern California. There's been a lot of work not only in Southern California, but across the country in places like San Francisco, Atlanta, New York, Orange County, where there's been this very deep analysis of the costs of homelessness. I was involved in such a project in the city of Anaheim way back in 2007. I've been doing this work since 1999. And in that community, we did just a small look at what was the cost to public services, emergency public services, in the way of fire department response, in the way of police engagement with people who are unhoused. And what we discovered in that 12 months, just in terms of those two public entities, that there were a small group of people who were being transported to and from parks and public places to the hospital at a cost of, just to open up the fire station and send a truck and an ambulance out, $1,000 per person per occurrence, just to open up that gate. So, and then when we looked at the numbers of people, we discovered there were some people who used that service, one lady in particular who used that service on 17 occasions in 1 year. Some of us thought it might have been more efficient to have a limousine to do that service versus having the fire department and the police department engaging in those services. So what you will find similarly as this community looks at their costs, you'll find that it is actually more expensive to maintain our current system than to find people housed, as we're doing with the MLK project, the MLK Commons project here with Homes for Good. So that's just a short way of saying, I think there's a anecdotal sense and it's sort of a common sense that our current system is a very, very expensive way to deal with this problem. And so what I wanted to mention is, in terms of the TAC recommendations, there are actually 10 recommendations. How many of you actually read or are aware of the TAC report? There's a lot of folks who have a great deal of knowledge of that. And let me just briefly read for you a summary of what those are. One is to expand and coordinate street outreach. A second is to expand what we call diversion. And that's basically a project or work that says there are people who may not even need to enter into our system. There are ways to keep them out of the system. And a third is, how do we expand and coordinate what we call rapid rehousing? That's essentially a declining rental subsidy for folks, primarily families, so they can get back on their feet as quickly as possible. The fourth is already underway in terms of 350 new units of permanent supportive housing. It's a particular housing product that's for a very specific population, folks who are disabled and have been homeless for quite a long time. The fifth is what we call move-on strategies. There are folks who are in that product, permanent supportive housing, and they no longer need supportive services, and so we can get them on other types of programs to help them to thrive. The sixth is tenancy supports. You can imagine in this context, from what I say, from Seattle to San Diego, affordable housing is one of the primary factors, and you have on your sheet, a table in front of you, a sheet about the causes of homelessness. It notes that one of those is a lack of affordable housing. So we need to find ways to work with landlords in our community, to work with folks who are experiencing homelessness, and how can we support the landlords and the property management communities that are willing to take on this risk? What can we do to incentivize their participation and mitigate and lower the risk they might experience? The seventh is what we call coordinated entry. How do we improve that system? And essentially, coordinated entry is a way to assess what the needs are of a particular individual family, and how do we get them? How do we right-size the best innovation for that family to get them back on their feet? We talked about landlord partnerships. And also, what we find in this community is that our service providers, they need to increase their capacity. And one way we can do that is with best training practices. So our efforts are around increasing training for our service providers. And the last is the creation of a shelter, a new public shelter that will be low barrier to help people who have that emergency need for housing. So we're making progress on these measures. There was a recent report that I gave with Steve Mokrzyski to the County Board of Supervisors. You can look at that report to hear a little bit more detail about how we're moving forward. We haven't implemented all of those recommendations, and there's really this larger five-year plan to address those. But let me say one other thing about the root causes of homelessness. One of the challenges we have in American culture is we tend to focus on individuals. We tend to lift up how an individual can overcome great obstacles, and that is a part of our ethos. And we do believe that individuals have the ability and the inspiration to do that. The thing that we are challenged to do is to look at larger structures and systems that the individual finds themselves within. And so there are some individuals that may have a more difficult time overcoming those obstacles. And so part of our work is to help communities understand what are those larger systems. And one of the things that I'm particularly struck with in this community in Lane County, I've been saying that our social safety net in Lane County has been decimated. And there are two primary factors for that, beginning in the 70s and throughout the 90s, and that is the decimation of the timber industry. My manager, Steve Manella, tells me that when that happened, $50 million of revenue was lost, tax revenue was lost to the county. Can you imagine what we would have done with $50 million over the last 40 years, every year, to support the social safety net, the services that we could provide in terms of mental health recovery, substance abuse recovery, what we could have done in terms of increasing the supply of affordable housing. So that was one hit we took. The other hit we took is this movement since about that time that has kept our taxes low. And I said a bad word there, taxes. But that is the reality. We love low taxes. And the consequence of low taxes is the decimation of our social safety net. So when we think together about what we can do, you as an individual, as a community, is one thing we can all do. It may seem not seem like much, but we can vote for people who support addressing this problem at a deep level. And also, you can get involved in many ways. We have an opportunity for you coming up in January, the point in time count. January 30th is a way for you to get involved and help us to get a measure of that. So thank you so much. I see my time is up.
So panel, you're going to sort of respond from your perspective. That's your job, about 3 minutes each. And we're going to start with Joaquin, and then Mark, and then Chris.
Hi, everyone. My name is Wakan Alferez, and I am the Supportive Housing Director with Homes for Good. So as Kitty mentioned, we're very excited to be a partner with so many great agencies in this community, including Lane County and many others, to address this specific issue. Homes for Good is the local housing authority, so we operate the public housing for this community as well as the Section 8 voucher program. And we know, you know, the data here in Lane County says that we have roughly 58% of our community that is rent burdened, and we do not have enough housing subsidies to support everyone. Our vision as an agency, and my vision personally, is that every individual in our community, including the most vulnerable, have access to a safe, secure, and stable home. We know that the cost to the community of individuals being unhoused, we pay that, regardless of whether we're paying it on the front end or the back end. And the cost increases the further down that continuum you go. So the more we're able to prevent people from entering the homeless system, providing appropriate affordable housing, providing subsidies for those that need it, the more we're able to decrease the number of folks who are unhoused in our community. And we need to recognize that individuals who are unhoused have needs that need to be met, and currently we're not providing places for those individuals to go to receive services, to be able to take showers, to access support for the systems that they need to navigate to get the help that they need. The systems here, most systems that support folks coming out of homelessness, are not easy to navigate, and when you're working with folks who have intense trauma, whether that came from prior to their homelessness or caused by their homelessness, they need support to be able to navigate these systems. Homes for Good, we're really working to think outside the box in addressing homelessness, so working with our community partners to develop the Commons on MLK, which is specifically targeted at the highest service users in our community. So the idea is that you're looking at who is using the most services, and this is using the Lane County frequent user system engagement. So looking at who is using the highest rate of hospitals, jails, prisons, homeless service systems, and housing them first. And the idea is that you can reduce the cost on the back end if you're providing them housing, providing wraparound services, and then you're not paying the cost of police and other enforcement on the street. So I'm just really excited that I see so many people here today. This is obviously an important conversation to be having with the community, and we're just really excited to be a part of creating the solution.
My name is Mark Douthat. I'm the program director of the Buckley Center Detox and Sobering Center. Sobering Center is what I'm going to talk about. That's what my perspective is today, and that's where my lens is. Sobering Center in calendar year 18 served 1,000 individuals 3,200 times. 800 of those people only came once. 200 of them came 2,000 times or more, roughly. And that group of individuals are part of that a term that was coined some years ago, super utilizers of services. They're the ones that are using the police, the fire and ambulance, the emergency rooms, all manner of safety net services. And I'd like to cast some light on the Sobering Center as part of that safety net and in the work that we do. We're overwhelmed with this new demand on our services, and we're seeing more people with bigger problems that we're seeing more often because they're slipping through. There's a lot of work being done in the community, but a lot of our folks are slipping through. We have a system in place that when we've seen someone too many times, we jump to plan B to address, to engage, and to build a plan to intervene. Our detox program is an intervention that stabilizes, returns a person to compliance with medication, that reconnects them with case management, puts them in residential care when needed. Unfortunately, these are a population of folks that have a high percentage of chronic and persistent mental illness, and their needs are very difficult to meet in the community right now. And Buckley Center Detox is and Sobering Center, the safety net. We want to be more recognized as part of that safety net in the community and to be able to achieve some sustainable funding as such. My view of impact on the community is the same as what our introductory speaker said, what my speaker to the left has alluded to. It is impactful at all levels of safety net services. The stuff that when we call 911, when we're in trouble, and we wonder why it takes 10, 15 minutes, it's because they're already doing something, and they've been there all day doing it. Our fire department rarely goes to a house fire. Most of the time, they're dealing with problems on the street. And if it's $1,000 to open the door, I don't know how much it costs after that, because the emergency room, if you're there for 30 minutes, is about $4,000. And it goes on from there. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Skinner, and just a couple of points of order. No, I'm not related to Eugene Skinner, but my kids, after 2 years, are still convinced that the Butte is named after them, so that's kind of fun for us as a family. It is absolutely my pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure for my family to be back in the Willamette Valley and serving the city of Eugene and its citizens. I've been your police chief since April of 2018, so it's only been a little bit over 18 months now. And from the moment I've gotten here, we've been working on a multitude of community issues and impacts to the community, one of which is the impacts of homelessness and the cost of homelessness to the Eugene Police Department. Your police department, fully staffed, has 192 police officers from top to bottom. That includes me all the way down to the newest baby cop to serve a city of 170,000 people in 50 square miles. That ratio is not a healthy ratio by any measure. And so that's one of the challenges that we have right out of the gate. We are trying to fix some of that with the community safety initiative that you may or may not know about, and I'm happy to talk to you about that after this, but we're hoping to change the trajectory of the type of service we can provide in this community with the community safety initiative. We file 5,000 misdemeanor crimes a year through our municipal court. That's second only statewide to Multnomah Circuit Court. There is a demand on police services and a demand on the system in Eugene that is unlike any city our size. There's no question. When we talk about the cost of homelessness to the police department, the way I like to frame it is I like to talk about the opportunity costs, or the things that we are doing that we can't do because of the things that we are doing. Your police department is made up of men and women who are probably better trained than most police officers in this state because of the nuances of policing in Eugene. They have the most oversight, the most public oversight, the most accountability of any police department I've ever been associated with, and I'm very proud of that. The men and women are asked to do an awful lot of things, one of which oftentimes when I go to these meetings is, Chief, what are you going to do about homelessness? And I will tell you the same thing that I tell you them, is that this is not a police problem. We're not going to arrest our way out of homelessness. We're not going to incarcerate our way out of homelessness. We need to find off-ramps for people that are homeless and give officers some options other than jail when it's appropriate. And let me be clear, jail sometimes is appropriate based on behavior, but oftentimes there are instances where jail isn't appropriate if we're looking for true off-ramps for people that are suffering from mental illness or substance addiction. We need to be able to do that. So when we talk about opportunity costs, we talk about your police officers. Where do you want your police officers doing, and what do you want them doing in your neighborhoods? Do you want your police officers back in their neighborhoods, or do you want them dealing with some of the livability issues that we're dealing with now when we think that there's a system that can help us with that?
Before I turn it back to Eric and we move into our audience questioning, I have a question for you all. And some of it you've answered, but you might think about how you might go at this a little deeply or something of this sort. Mine is that from each of your perspectives, what do you consider are some of the best opportunities we have right now to reduce homelessness? And how do you think we can best build and improve community expectations and beliefs about this population?
I can start. Again, my name is Wakan at Homes for Good. I think right now is a very unique opportunity here in Oregon and also Lane County. The state and the local government have really invested in this issue, both with the construction excise tax to hopefully encourage additional affordable housing. Separate than the issue of homelessness, like we know we have a lack of available units in this community to house people. Our population has increased, our units have not. But I think there are some unique things happening that'll impact that. There's some efforts at the state level to have a local rental subsidy program. You know, the federal government, the investment in those resources have been decreasing in recent years. And so it's super important that we fill that gap locally. And I think we have that energy here in the community to do that, both here in Lane County and also at the state. And also just the TAC report recommendations and the energy behind those. And really, the project on MLK, I think, is a good example that we are investing in the solutions here. And so I hope the community can see that progress and continues to see it in the years to come, because there is investment in energy, not just from the community, but we have healthcare providers investing in our project on MLK. So this is not a singularly taxpayer-supported initiative. This is the community coming together to house our neighbors. And I think that's just a unique point in time here that we should recognize and honor. Thanks.
Hi, Mark Douthat, Program Director, Buckley Silbering and Detox. From a provider standpoint, for us, it's all about resources. And, you know, we can work with people all day long. If we have nowhere to send them, then our discharge plan is just flat. And we're looking at the problems we face today is a good portion of our folks are minimum wage folks. The gap between where minimum wage starts and where affordable housing begins in the Eugene Springfield area is atrocious, and until we can get to a place where we've capped that rent under some of these facilities for people to be able to afford to rent, and I hear that's happening, but for us it's about resources. Ours is from a provider standpoint. We're on the front lines providing the intervention that's bringing that person from the back of that police car into a drug treatment program. But sometimes we need housing interim, and that gap is huge for us and for the people. The other piece that we haven't touched on today is the children of the homeless, and they suffer greatly. Because there's no system to completely deal with what's going on with the kids, and that's an issue that's close to my own heart.
Chief Chris Skinner, the Eugene Police Department. A couple of thoughts. One of those is in the way of resources. We have help on the way when it comes to the front end resources of your police department being able to better serve your needs when you call 911 or non-emergency dispatch for help. The piece that we're missing is the system that supports what we do. The system, the back end of that system that supports the issues around mental illness and substance abuse. What we hope to not do once we have an encounter with somebody is see that person over and over and over again. And so there's a back end of this system that we really need to invest in and be able to do that. A couple of opportunities that we have recently, two of them in my mind. One is, I think we've lost, it feels like to me, we've lost kind of what the face of homelessness is. That we have a tendency to see homelessness as some of the, what I will call protest camps that we see in and around the downtown, and that's what we see as the face of homelessness, and I feel like we're losing sight of those people, like the 1,500 children that are homeless in our 4J school district, or those individuals that are one rent hike away from being homeless, or those people that are just on the verge of some kind of medical crisis that's going to put them into bankruptcy and not be able to afford those homes. So for me, it's trying to be mindful of what the face of homelessness actually looks like so that we can be focused on solving the problem. And another tremendous opportunity for us that I'm excited about is that when your police officer has an opportunity to intervene in somebody's lives due to their bad behavior, we need to have something other than jail as our only alternative. And I'm excited about the collaboration between the city and the county around the work we're trying to do on providing a crisis center for people so that we can have a deferral to jail when it's appropriate and get people on a path to wellness that way, and so that there's not a recidivism issue with that particular person. So there's some really good work that's being done, and it does give that crisis center as one of those off-ramps that I think is going to be crucial for us to be able to move forward.
Thank you for that. It's very important understanding that with 58% of our community house burdened, this is the everyday problem. And so we're going to take a 5-minute break so that we can formulate questions for our panel today, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Good evening. You're listening to City Club of Eugene on KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. You can find all City Club of Eugene programs on our website, klcc.org.
Okay, I think we're ready to go. All right, John.
Good afternoon. John Brown, City Club member, and by way of disclosure, I am the board president of Willamette Family, which we run Buckley amongst other facilities. Question for Mark, would you talk about the economics and the financial feasibility of continuing to run Buckley and what would happen if Buckley weren't able to financially continue?
Well, one of our biggest obstacles today is sustainable funding. In the beginning, sobering was funded through a corrections bond levy, and it was 100% funded. It was 1989. My very first job was there was February 90. So I was there in the beginning of it, and funding wasn't an issue, but periodically it has been. And I'd like to take this opportunity to say that the City of Eugene, City of Springfield, and Lane County Parole and Probation are sole contributors to the support of it. And we have a gap of $250,000 annually that we got to pull from other services, some of our family services and stuff. We're not cutting any programs, but it keeps us from being able to expand and to offer more robust services because we're propping up the deficit that's in our sobering. So if I could say one thing about the economics of it is that we desperately need sustainable funding for this crucial safety net service to the community that's been in continuous operation 24/7, 365 since December of 1989. We closed for an hour during one of the snowstorms, but we got right back up. So, but that's where I would leave this. Thank you.
Sandy Erickson, City Club member. Half the people, nationally speaking, live alone now. Half of them live in cities. Half of them are divorced. So the intergenerational education that happened in the past is not happening. And a huge cause of homelessness is ignorance. Yet the TAC report, the school system's not in this room. Yes, it's going to be two words. I'm on time. And with all due respect, nobody at the panel has addressed the concept of prevention. Long-term prevention is possible. We did it for 20 years in San Francisco. And my question is, why not?
I guess I'll take a stab at that. I guess I'm curious, are we talking about prevention of homelessness? Was that the question? Yes. I definitely think, and the TAC report does kind of highlight the need to address the entire continuum of homelessness from those that are at risk, are experiencing some sort of housing instability, all the way down to people who are situationally homeless and folks who have been homeless for long periods of time. And so the more that we can stop the flow of people entering the homeless system, the more that we can do cost-effective interventions that really will address this issue. From Homes for Good's perspective, we've invested a lot in that specific thing. So we now have resident services at all of our public housing complexes that work to stabilize individuals who are experiencing housing instability. We also now have a housing liaison who works with those with Section 8 vouchers who might be experiencing instability, whether it be from inability to pay rent due to some situational, like loss of job or situations like that, all the way to connecting with programs like Shelter Care's Housing Retention Program to address the behavioral health needs of those experiencing housing instability. So I think there is a lot of energy and focus right now on how do you stop the flow of people entering the homeless system, and that's really where your money is the best spent. So let's focus on building up those interventions, and I do think there's some fantastic ones happening in the community right now.
Mark Douthat here, Buckley Center Detox and Sobering Director. I'm not going to talk about money this time. I'm going to talk about resources. I'm going to talk about intervention resources. For us, being able to intervene when someone comes to us for the first time requires that we have that full supportive kind of resource net in the community. And to me, that's preventative. We've got a person that comes in, they're suffering from an acute episode of mental illness, compounded by comorbid medical conditions and substance abuse, alcohol included. Most of our people are using alcohol. Alcohol kills almost 100,000 people a year in this country, twice as many as opiates do. Opiates are in the news, alcohol gets ignored. It's still taking lives. We're doing intervention on these people in a medical detox with assessment and referral for housing and continued care services at appropriate levels of care with the resources we have at our disposal. We use all of our own programs, and then we refer out to the counties around us when we can. And when we're successful, it's a beautiful thing. It is. But resource-wise, you hit a wall. And sometimes you have to send people to outpatient. Now they've returned. They're what we call Dimension 6. Their recovery environment where they live is unstable. They go back to it because that's where they know to go. Some of them refuse alternative referrals and the rest of it. But the bottom line is our biggest barrier is there's not enough accessible resources for our folks. I'm not thinking anybody can wave a magic wand. I think a lot of work is being done, and I think that that Chief Skinner talked about a crisis center that's going to be used to divert people with low level crimes to be able to have an opportunity. And so for me, that is prevention, and I think we have been doing it for a period of time. I think we've just hit a wall with we've got too many people coming in. So prevention also starts in the schools, and it's been a factor in education and services offered at the school level for kids and for preteens and teens, especially kids in the juvenile system. The restorative justice model that the juvenile system currently deploys is a wonderful thing, and it is working to some degree better than many other states. I can say.
We'll try to make our questions and our answers as short as we can so we can get all of these questions in.
Todd Boyle, First SL Housing Discussion Group on Facebook, in which we talk about the housing crisis at the low end. There's 36,000 people living in Eugene on less than $1,000 a month, and that's over 20% of the population, isn't it? And 10% is the first decile are living on $700 a month, and they can't afford the rents that are currently available. So my question is, especially to Chief Skinner and other and any housing expert, isn't the problem really a housing problem? And are we going to implement HB 2001 and get more units on our land that's available? Thank you.
I wish I had a master's in land use planning for that question, but I don't. Your police department has an opportunity, a unique opportunity to see kind of the entire landscape because of the numbers of people that we come into contact with. Of all kinds. Most of those contacts are as a result of complaints that we get, and we're doing that. One of the things that we lack as a police department is the ability to do in 21st century policing, is to engage with the people that we're dealing with in a profound enough way to better understand the human condition and their set of circumstances. And instead of just going to that call, servicing that call, and moving on to the next call, actually try and connect those people that we see that are the most vulnerable with the services before they become homeless. And that's a piece that I think your police department has the ability to do as we create capacity. If you think about that as a triage, as we go into somebody's home or we go to deal with something and we notice that this family is particularly vulnerable, how nice would that be that your police department could have the wherewithal and the resources and the discretionary time to actually say, you know what, let's not exasperate this problem. Let's see if we connect these people with some services. One of the very low-level services that we do have in the police department through our police foundation, who does fantastic work raising money, is our Community Cares Fund. Every single supervisor on your Eugene Police Department has a debit card that they can pay for essential services for people that are in crisis. A great example of that is what happened Wednesday in this community when three individuals were shot in their neighborhood. And the mother of the person that committed the act of violence, whose son had taken his own life that day, had nowhere else to go, and we were able to take care of her with that Community Cares Fund. So those are the types of things that we're trying to pay attention to.
Thank you. Jerry?
Jerry Smith, City Club member, retired social worker. I really appreciate what your agencies are doing. And as a person volunteering with homeless people, I know that you don't have the staff to handle the people I see every single week I understand that the inflow is of new homeless people is about 63 per month. But the problem is we don't have real good data. It's probably more than that. I would hope that you would join to come to receptive people like the city and the county and particularly Congress and the Senate and say, we are inadequately funded. You've taken away so much in recent years that there is no welfare.
Is there a question, Jerry? Question?
Yes. The question I'm saying is, can you get together as a serving group with real problems of shortages of staff and funding, shortages of housing, and ask for federal dollars to be restored so we can have an American democracy that cares about, as you said, I'm like you, I can't see 1,400 children going homeless. That's not the America I grew up in.
Thank you. Any comments?
Chief Chris Skinner, Eugene Police Department. The only thing that I would say, and again, I have the unique perspective of having only been here 18 months, and so sometimes when you haven't been living in this problem, you have a different perspective. I get to see it through a clear lens. I will tell you that I've been very, very impressed lately with the continued collaboration between both the city and the county coming together to try and solve this problem around the TAC report, and maybe more importantly, coming together as a single voice as it pertains to lobbying efforts at both the state and the federal level for those types of funding. Having sat through those meetings and listened to those conversations, that there's some really, really bright individuals and some great cooperation and collaboration between the city and the county that I'm hopeful will continue to move us in the right direction.
Thank you. Next question.
Barbara Date, City Club member for several years. I'm bringing this question from my table. We're aware there are a lot of vacant units here, and we wonder whether there is some kind of inventory of vacant units, and if so, how can our unhoused folks move into those existing units?
Wakana Affairs, Homes for Good. Eugene and Lane County as a whole has a relatively low vacancy rate. I would say within the Homes for Good housing, our vacancy rate is somewhere close to 2%, which is very low. It does not provide a lot of time to turn a unit and get it to the next person. I think the Eugene area is closer to 4%. You're definitely right that there are vacancies within our housing stock. However, if you look at the need for housing, the total number of households in the community, and the total number of units available, it really is a lack of units. And so, again, as our populations increase, we have not increased our housing stock to reflect that. So I do think fundamentally we need to just build more housing.
Susan Conley, City Club member since 2008. Thank you all for coming. Really appreciate it. This morning's Register Guard told us that Eugene is the number one town, place in the country for the ratio of homeless versus population. Now, I've wondered about this for years, and other panels have always said, because it's on I-5. Well, I don't think we can say that anymore, so I'd like your observations on how we got into this situation.
Again, Wakan, Homes for Good. I really do think that we really haven't taken stock to the fact that our community is an ideal place to live and that people do move here from lots of different places. But again, we have not increased the housing in the same way that other communities that have had similar increases in population have done. So we really just haven't met the need or the demand of people moving here. And I would also just say that we also don't have a low-barrier homeless shelter. So when you look at the number of unhoused community members on the street, because I think that number was in relation to the unsheltered. And so we do have, you know, a portion of our unhoused community that is sheltered, but we have an extremely high number of unsheltered homeless or unhoused members of the community. And that really speaks to our lack of a shelter, specifically a shelter that is low barrier, that does not have restrictive requirements to entry. So I really think the development of a local shelter will address a lot of what we're lacking here in the community that other communities like Portland or communities that are experiencing similar levels of homelessness but have a lower level of unsheltered homelessness. And we need to be looking and replicating those models.
Thank you. Next up.
Hi, Thomas Huda, they, them pronouns, and City Club member since 2019. This is my first meeting as a member.
Welcome.
Thank you. My question is about, unfortunately, a kind of homelessness that I have experienced, which is when you kind of come out as identifying as LGBTQ+, and then find that your family doesn't support you anymore. Are there success stories or places where you have seen, you know, positive outcomes for these kinds of youth who are living all around Lane County and experiencing this?
Anybody?
I'll take that one again. This is Wakan from Homes for Good. I think specifically it feels like here in Lane County we lack agencies that are focused specifically on the LGBTQ community and providing services and housing. We do have a few, but I think that hasn't really been integrated into a lot of our homeless service systems. And it's something that we've been looking at in terms of like, how do we better serve this population? And especially since a lot of our homeless service programs are coming from the coordinated entry or a centralized wait list, and really looking at how those systems potentially exclude certain populations, and how do we help either adjust the system to make sure that we're including the right or everyone that needs to be included in those systems, or how do we create systems outside of that to address the specific need of the unhoused community, specifically from LGBTQ individuals. I know there are, like Looking Glass, who is a community that works with youth. There is a high population of youth unhoused that identify as LGBTQ. And so really looking at how do we support youth, and are there systems already in place that are supporting youth that could more adequately support this population? And I think that's something we need to be looking at and investing in our community.
Thank you. All right, next up.
Hi, Ralph Fledger, member City Club since 2016, I think. Asking question for a visitor. Is there coordination with medical facilities such as hospitals to control the cost of emergency admissions for people without resources, and a kind of addendum? Why is the, does anyone here have an idea why the former mental health hospital in Junction City is not in use?
Thank you.
Mark Douthat, Buckley Detox and Sobering. I'd like to address the first part of that question. You know, Buckley Sobering is a diversion alternative for the emergency room. If the Sobering Center wasn't there, a good portion of the folks that are picked up incoherent, unable to care for themselves. In the past, the destination was either jail if they'd broken the law or to the emergency room, because it's not an option to leave them where they are. Otherwise, you'll just be they'll just be returning to deal with them again and again. So something has to be done. The Sobering Center versus the emergency room, for each person that we see or each admission, because we're going to see some people more than once, is a huge cost savings of 300-500% cost savings. So we saw 1,000 people last year. I mean, you know, the math on that speaks for itself.
This is Wakan from Homes for Good. I just want to add very quickly to that. We, with the Commons on MLK project, just highlighting that we have investments from Peace Health and Kaiser Permanente and Pacific Source and Trillium, like four of our main healthcare providers in our area. And again, the focus of that project is to look at those that have the highest usage of emergency room visits and really house them and get the care and services they need right there in the home, so that they are not utilizing the emergency services. And similar projects in Portland have shown that can decrease like by close to 50% the cost of those healthcare services. So Housing First really does work specifically to reduce the cost of healthcare in the emergency room.
Thank you. Richard Self with How's Everyone? H-O-U-S-E, How's Everyone? Real quickly, if we have a situation where we're talking about the TAC report and all of this stuff, and we have at least 2,100 homeless people that are adults, we have God knows how many youth out there. So some of this could be, obviously the status quo isn't working. So what can we do? Can we, Chief, try sanction camping for a small groups of people self-governed in lands that are giving up by people who don't say, not in my backyard? And can we advance the plan? You talk about the low barrier shelter. The TAC report talks about a navigation center and a day center somewhere in there in those 800 pages. Can we get on board? I just was at a meeting of business owners that had it up to here, and maybe here, mm-hmm. with what's going on as far as what they call the lawlessness, and there's just people having mental breakdowns, and the mental health issues are really a big deal, but there's not enough officers, and I thank God that we have a police chief that got a little empathy, and Homes for Good has stepped in with both feet when they were only asked a little segment in
Do
the TAC report.
Do you have a specific question?
My specific question is, the time is up. We need to do something now. Can we rescind some of the ordinances? Can we move faster on the day center and low barrier shelter? Can we do more?
Yeah. Chief?
Sure, I'll try to address that. Chris Skinner, City of Eugene Police Chief. From the moment I've arrived, and I think I stood in this room pretty early on in my tenure here, I've said that if you're going to ask me to tell people that they can't be someplace, you need to give me a place where I can tell them to go. So the good news is we're working on that. The city is doing a great job with the county on the TAC report. We are in the process of trying to site the 75-bed low-barrier emergency stabilization shelter. That's going to be a piece of this that really, really helps your police department out and relieve some of that pain. We need to continue that good work to be able to do this. What I will tell you around the unsanctioned camping or the space for camping, what I have found when I've done my chief's forums, and maybe most profoundly when I did my forum down at New Day Bakery in the Whitaker, I had several unhoused individuals, adults, come to me and talk to me about where they were camping and ask me to please, if we're going to provide a place with some level of accountability and oversight so that they can feel a sense of equity in the camp that they're in. There are people being victimized all over our city that are not reporting themselves as victims, and so we don't want to create an environment that perpetuates further victimization of our homeless individuals. And so we've been resistant, and we've been down that path kind of on Camp 99 where we had some space for people, and we have some experience in that space to understand that some level of service, some level of accountability, some level of societal norms and rules in these camps is really healthy for people. It's not unkind to just let people be out in the cold, certainly. It's not unkind to put them in situations where they continue to be victimized. And so I would say that we need to be a little bit thoughtful about what we do around the camping as opposed to just opening up a place and allowing people to just camp.
Okay, I think time. Two short ones? Okay, so quick.
Come on, Cliff, get going.
Teach the boss. Anyway. Okay, rents are too high. It was quite a shock for me to arrive in Eugene 10 years ago and discover what they were. A little while ago, about 3-4 years ago, I did an analysis of what rents here were.
You have a question, Cliff? A question? A quick question?
Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Okay, We don't have much time. That's the problem.
Okay. But rents here were relative to property values, and I did a comparison with the San Francisco Bay Area, which I am very familiar with, and I found that in the conclusion, without telling you how I arrived at this, the rents are here are twice what they should be, two times, to which if everyone landlord reduced their rents in half, they would still make a reasonable profit by any reasonable man's standard in the court of law. So my question is, why do we not confront the unscrupulous landlords and the landlords that follow them and this mythic course of something claimed to be a market that they manufacture themselves? Let's have them open their books and prove what their property status is.
So let's see if anybody wants to respond to that.
This is Wakan from Homes for Good. Again, I'll respond to that. We definitely have seen astronomical rent increases here in Lane County, and that's definitely something I think we need to be hyper aware of, especially because our incomes have not matched that increase in rent. I do think that the state has, with the passage of the bill for rent control, has really said and stated that this is important to us, that we need to be paying attention to this. And it is very hard because private market landlords are driven by the market, meaning that if people are willing to pay, well, I mean, this is the reality, is that fair market rent is based on what rent in the area is. And so even as the housing authority, our rents are based on fair market rent. And so I do think a level of rent control is helpful in that. And I also think we need to address the stagnation in wages and look at other options. Portland's looked at inclusionary zoning as an example, which means that as a developer builds a new building, you ask them to put in a portion of affordable units into their project. So there are models out there that can help address this. I think we're stepping in that direction, and we need to do more.
A last question. Very quick.
Ruth Emler, City Club, a member. My question is, I understand what age are homeless. I understand from Terry McDonald of St. Vinny's, and they house thousands of people every night. What is the age range? I understand it's older citizens, and especially older women. And since I saw six carts going down the street the other day with older women pushing them, is that really true? Do you find more older women?
I mean, I can't speak to the, this is Wakan from Homes for Good again. I can't speak to the specific statistics, but we definitely, I mean, we recognize we have an aging population. And as you have more individuals turning 65, more people that don't have retirement, they are relying on fixed incomes like Social Security, which we all know you cannot rent an apartment here in Eugene or Lane County on a fixed income unless you're receiving a subsidy. And unfortunately, subsidies are not considered entitlements like food stamps or other benefits that are based on need. Housing is based on the quantity that we receive from the federal government, and it is nowhere near needing to match the need. And so there is a need to address specifically, I think, senior housing and housing for those that do not have the retirement needed to afford a reasonable unit here in our community, and making sure that we have homeless services that also meet the needs of that population.
Mark Douthat, Buckley Detox and Sobering. In responding to that question, what I can say is that prior to 2003, the bulk of the people we were serving were male between the ages of 31 and 44, and all of them were alcohol primary folks, and 100% of them were homeless that were using our sobering services. Fast forward to 2019, and that age is 25 to 37, so what we're seeing is a trend where these people are much younger. What we're not seeing as a change is that alcohol is still king. It is still included in the intake information of 100% of our people that are coming in. So I say the emphasis of Manus is on opiates, but the alcohol is still there, and the people are getting younger.
All right. Thank you very much. It seems like this conversation has really highlighted the fact that these three great panelists are doing good job, but this is a program we need all hands on deck. We heard a little bit about education, mental health, and many other agencies that are going to have to come to bear. Before we thank today's speakers, there are a few quick announcements. I'd like to thank Guidos Turnside and Balthrop, Pacific Cascade Federal Credit Union, and Dr. Sandy Abira for supporting our programs. We also like to thank KRVM 91.9 Radio, PAC Info, and Simplified Computing LLC, Dotson Photography, and Network Charter School, and to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing the City Clubs on Monday nights at 6:30 p.m. And thank you to Community Television Lane County, Cable Channel 29 for televising recent City Club events. Next week, we will have a program on teaching philosophy to children. We will have Paul Bowden and Carol Lundquist from the University of Oregon and Carly Levitt, a fifth grade teacher from Camas Ridge Elementary, to discuss how to build bigger, better minds. Please join us next week. More information and details can be found at cityclubofeugene.org. Kitty?
And now we want to thank our speakers. Bob Sorens is already gone, but we appreciate him, and Joaquin Alferez, and Mark Dalnit, is that right? Dalvin? And of course, Chief Chris Skinner. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's program. Thank you. See you next week.